Hello and welcome to Human Inquest episode 403, the forbidden episode. I'm your host, Mike Apps, aka Wheels, and with me as always,
Tycho Drum Master, David Bernie Fama Master.
And your man in Japan grading student papers. Michael Baker, Gajimunoka, Monogatari. And joining us now.
What?
A wild Joe approaches, Command.
Yes, switching Joe Gamer.
What happened to Saga Joe Gamer?
I don't know. Well, somebody said they wanted... Somebody wanted the Switch 2 voice channel thing in Discord to reflect Switch 2 related things. I don't know.
Wheels was very lazy and just put 2 at the end of his display name.
That's correct. But it does complete the assignment.
Yes.
But it gets a D minus.
I'll take it. Oh, they get.
Did you start yet?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, hello, audience.
Hello.
You're live and in color.
In living color?
We're available.
Cool.
Yeah. What have we been up to? What have we been doing?
Well, last night we had a good time playing Marvel Rivals. We only had like 2 bad matches, and I didn't rage quit or really drop too many F-bombs.
True. Yeah. I played as Ultron, who is inexplicably a healer.
Why?
That seems to be playing against type.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the problem is if they did otherwise, he would just be a different version of Iron Man. So they had to come up with something else.
In which, you know what, in character, that would probably piss him off even more.
True.
It's like, oh, you're just a cut-rate Iron Man made out of iron. Die. Yes.
But it
is currently finals week at high school.
Oh, wow.
Right.
So I just went through 84 tests for 2 classes, just checking the reading section, writing section.
Oh dear.
Oh boy.
Yep. Thankfully, it's the sports kids classes, so expectations are not high to begin with. And it's really simply, can they remember enough of the original writing prompt from class to reproduce it? And a lot of them are really good at doing that much.
So they know exactly how much they need to do.
Yeah.
I mean, and a lot of them, I mean, just, I mean, one kid who, I love him as I might, I cannot give him more than a third of the point, actually less than a third of the points total for the exercise. He knew what he wanted to write. He knew more or less what the question was. He did not know, or he did not remember any of the words necessary to explain himself.
Oof.
So he managed to use cost to mean cost, worth, value, cost, worth, expensive, and price.
I mean, almost works.
I'm amazed. I can actually understand what you're trying to say here, kid. So I'm giving you some points for sheer attempt at communication. because you did a lot better than some of the other kids who were simply trying to repeat the same sentence over and over again.
Farm Rider asking if any of your students have attempted to use ChatGPT on you.
Once so far this year, and I wrote on the sentence like, okay, dude, first of all, no. Second of all, do you know how to use any of these words that you just used here? Third, you somehow failed to actually answer the question. Because it was clearly stated up above in English and Japanese, you have to answer these 3 points. And ChatGPT just kind of ignored 2 of the 3 points completely.
As it is so fond of doing.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm even honest with him. It's like, okay, guys, if you don't know the words, sure, look them up. Don't just trust what Google says immediately. Actually use the translation engine if you really need to, because it will give you options. Straight up Googling will give you one option, and it is quite likely not the option that you need. But at the same time, dudes, we are asking you to write sentences for a reason, and that is to practice. And I'm trying to explain this to them in Japanese, as in practicing hones your skills. Norioko o, I just forgot the word here.
Oh, now you're forgetting the words.
I'm explaining to them, I can actually, Migayatator, thank you, Migayatator. I'm explaining them to that in those terms, because all of these kids are full-on sports team. Like, English is the afterthought here.
Practice.
Yeah. And explaining it to them in that sense actually gets them to at least try to put a sentence together on their own, but instead of putting the Japanese into translation, into whatever translation program they prefer, and writing that down instead. And I can definitely tell by which mistakes they make which translation software they've been trying to use.
Each translation software has its own faults it's prone to.
Yeah, the one that was popular about 3 or 4 years ago was notorious for not understanding how Japanese passive tense works.
Oh, dear.
Which, I mean, granted, it is actually a tense, and the way the Japanese subject particle works does not make sense with English if you're doing a one-to-one translation, in the sense.
Yeah.
Which is how a sentence like, hambago taberaremasu turns into, the hamburger eats it.
Oh, yeah, I've seen translations that do things like that.
Yeah, because the translation software did not recognize that this is, in fact, passive tense to be put into passive voice. And that while the hamburger is eaten, the subject, it is also technically the object.
Hamburger was eaten.
Hamburger. Yes.
Yeah. In fact, I mean, in context, it literally was we ate hamburgers. Because in Japanese, the context will actually work this way, because you can tell transitive from intransitive verbs. You cannot do this in English, usually.
I would never.
You would never eat a hamburger?
What? No, I would never tell the difference between verbs.
I mean, it's like there's only two sets of verbs in English that actually have transitive and intransitive differences. So, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Lie, lay, rise, raise. Yeah.
A long time ago, I used to say costed, you know, like I bought a video game, it costed $50. And people like, it was a math teacher who was like, no, that's not how that works. And my sister was like, no, that's not how that works. And I was like, but. You know, it costs $5. I'm like, no, but it costed because I already bought it. Like, I don't know.
I mean, you will find lots of people saying casted online when it's just cast. But...
My
brother used to say lost.
Like they casted him in the lead role?
He was cast in the role.
If it's a one syllable word that ends in a T or a D, 9 times out of 10, it will not change in past tense or past participle. There's only a few that are different, like sat.
Language is hard.
And a lot of that's because it got shortened from something else.
Yeah. Well, you know, so just
the problem, with English is that it used to absolutely have specific rules and patterns for ablaut, changing the vowel in the middle of verbs. For the older English verbs, and it simplified about between 60 and 80% of the rules out of existence, but kept a lot of the basic verbs anyway.
They're good verbs.
Yeah. That's why you have an entire set that changes I to A to U, like sing, sang, sung, or sing, sang, sung.
The words that best describe drink, you are as follows, and I quote, stink, stank,
stink, stank, stump. Yes. So yeah, there's like, I think 8 verbs like that in English. They're all in a set and they almost all have an N, K, or NG in them. So, because they all followed this old pattern that is that literally dates back to Old English, and they're the only verbs left that have that pattern.
The only survivors of a great of an extinction event.
No, I mean, but this is also why a lot of verbs in English have a strong vowel and a weak vowel, depending on the verb tense, like the e, e, keep, kept, sleep, slept, learn, take, took. A lot of verbs follow this pattern, but due to spelling changes and influences from, among other things, French and Dutch, the spellings no longer make sense with it. Whereas if you look over at German with the diacritical mark for umlaut and ablaut, mm-hmm. it matches up pretty well to that. Mm-hmm. And the things I've had to research in order to explain the insanity of English to my fellow teachers.
Firemine are also asking how difficult it seems to be for Japanese people to get used to conversing in the getting used to conversational cues and such in English.
So here's the thing with English. The basic language is so ridiculously plastic that you can become conversational with fairly low critical ability. It's just...
Yeah, I think he's more getting at, like, he described, like, emotional cues, so, like, nonverbal cues and such that come with English.
A lot of that is actually easier to pick up if you're not thinking about it too hard.
Sure enough.
Yeah. I mean, one of my favorite little comedy routines is trying to explain the use of the word really.
Really?
Because depending on which tone you put, you can get 10 different translations for that one word into Japanese. because as I'm trying to explain to the students, it's not a matter of which words match which words or which grammar matches which grammar. It's which feeling or mood matches which feeling or mood. And these may not be related words at all between the two languages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because really can be like, really? Like, I don't believe you. Or really? Like, that's interesting. Or really? Like, really? Sarcastic. Yeah.
Really? 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 Really?
And that's really good. That's really fun.
Is that really necessary?
Exactly.
No, not at all.
Okay, we should talk about a video game at some point.
Okay, so connecting to video games, this is why localization is very important, but at the same time, incredibly infuriating.
There you go.
And also why things like, as much as literary snobs hate it, sometimes you really do just need to go all caps on some things.
Sometimes you just gotta yell.
You just need to show that there is an emphasis on one word or another in a way that completely reframes the sentence. Like the classic, I never said she stole my bag, or I never said she took my bag.
Mm-hmm.
Where if you emphasize any given word in that sentence, you suddenly reframe it into a completely different situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I never said she took the bag. No. I never said she took my bag. Mm-mm. She took somebody else's bag.
I never said she took my bag. I never said she took my bag.
And this kind of thing is common across many languages, but English is just can get really snotty about it because we're so vague on other parts of speech.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I love being
I remember remarking to a guy I knew, a fellow teacher over here who's a native Spanish speaker. His English is really good still. But like, in almost any other language in Europe, you can look at a sentence and you can tell exactly what the verb is, or where the verb is.
Fuck verb.
English, that's not necessarily true. So.
Yeah. Well, but you mentioned
all about nouns.
You mentioned hamburgers, and I can tie that to a game.
Yep.
When I'm playing Mario Kart Worlds. I was telling somebody, I'm like, Nabbit reminds me of the Hamburglar.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm playing Mario Kart World, I'm chasing Nabbit around, and I'm like, I think he's the Hamburglar. And then you get the bags of food from the Yoshi's fast food place, and it's like, I want some McDonald's, damn it.
Ew, gross.
But then the other day, I had to explain to a Gen Z person who the Hamburglar was, because I'm like, yeah, Nabbit, Hamburglar. They're like, what are you saying? was like, well, you know who Ronald McDonald is?
25 years ago or 30 years ago.
Yeah, I had to explain Ronald McDonald, Grimace, and the Hamburglar, and that
Mayor McCheese.
All the world's most awful creatures.
Yeah, you realize by explaining it, you're just making yourself look older, and you should have just dropped the subject and moved on.
Yeah, but then what was the duck
back
girl?
In my day,
what was her
Nichols
name?
Had pictured the bumblebee.
I remember the Fry Guys.
Yeah,
I barely remember the duck face girl.
Yeah, so that's so.
For a quarter, you'd say.
I posted a joke on Blue Sky and nobody got it because I said Nabbit reminds me of Hamburglar. Yeah. Oh well.
Listen, my favorite anything to do with the Hamburglar was a series of drill tweets that was remarkably obscene, so I won't be repeating them right now.
Okay.
And it was mostly him stating that people no longer fear the Hamburglar, and he needed to be replaced with a villain to increase the perceived value of McDonald's food.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
Sounds like drill.
I have no idea where this is going, but yet I still dread the answer.
I will just give you the most horrible part of it all at once. You're just going to have to accept that.
Okay.
Let me see if I can get this pulled up properly. Let's see. Your current slogan, "I'm loving it," will no longer do. I would suggest replacing it with, "Look out, here comes the McShitter."
What the hell?
Yeah,
that's funny.
I appreciate that he tweeted like a series of like 15 tweets directly at McDonald's. You could not see this unless you were following both.
Oh my god.
Wow.
I have a $1 million idea that will pull your failing company directly out of the toilet. Beautiful.
Well, I like the post I saw. It was Pennywise was like, "Oh yeah, I killed a bunch of kids." And then the Joker is like, "Oh, I killed like lots of people." And then Ronald McDonald says, "I killed millions of people and they paid me for it."
turning back time to an earlier decade, has anyone ever heard the song Big Mac Tree?
I have not.
I remember hearing it on Dr. Demento, and I finally dug it up on YouTube a while back. But it was this comic musician from like the early 90s. He had a short career and he's still hanging around, but he did this kind of sounds kind of reggae song about just all about the Big Mac come from the Big Mac tree. Mm-hmm. And is trying to trace the lineage of, I mean, where did the ingredients come from? And it does not end where you would think it would, but it's kind of silly. I'll post a link later.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so okay, on actual game stuff. My opinion of Astria Ascending is still descending.
Oh, that's not good.
Yeah, I mean it's not going to reach the 2.0 two out of five level, just because that would require certain functional or layers of functionality to be more broken than that everything actually is. It's functional. It's just not fun.
It's functionally bad, is what you're saying.
Oh. Yeah. It's falling squarely into my disappointment range, which for me is always going to be a 2.5. Or.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, okay, so we have side-scrolling, semi-platformer type of levels like Valkyrie Profile, but none of the originality of level design. Especially since last year I played Child of Light, which had a very similar sort of aesthetic and side-scrolling stuff, and was a lot more interesting to deal with.
That game is really good.
Yeah. Plus the fact that the combat system is very, very focused on hitting weak, like elemental weak or damage weaknesses, and then capitalizing on it. Which is, I mean, that part is fairly well done for the way it works. However, none of the support systems for it are good. because, like, there is no way to tell what something is weak against until you hit it.
Well, that seems not good.
I mean, technically, yes, there is a scan spell that you can use, but then you have to remember what specific enemies are weak against. I mean, which element the enemy uses is actually generally pretty obvious. What kind of magical attack it can use. This in no way correlates directly to which element it is weak against. And so you can have two enemies in an area that are very similar and have them have different weaknesses. But there is no, you know, for a lot of games that have an elemental weakness system, they might have something in the targeting menu to let you know the second or third time what this thing is weak against, just like notes. There's no access to anything like that in battle. So you are either regularly using scan to remind yourself what these weaknesses are, or you're just writing it down. And then there's also the issue that bosses are immune to scan.
Okay.
That was my reaction the first time. Thankfully, the one boss so far that has had an elemental shuffling strategy was also the most obvious one for which element to hit it with, because it was literally whatever the opposite of what it's hitting you with right now is what it's weak against at the moment. So that was nice. That was good to know. That was a lot easier than it could have been. But the most recent boss that I fought, it's a 3-stage boss, so you get it down to 0, it comes back at full health with a slightly stronger form. Twice. And the third version has an eviction ability, which kicks people out of battle. I have no idea how to get people back into battle. I can't swap in new characters for an evicted spot. They don't come back. Everyone gets evicted, it's game over. And there is no way I can hit it for enough damage in a short enough period of time to get rid of it before it evicts everybody.
Well, did they pay their rent? Sorry.
Oh, they definitely paid their dues, because also the enemy targeting strategies tend to favor whatever damages them the most. So, if an enemy or if a character hits an enemy with an appropriately an attack that it's appropriately weak against, that will aggro all of its attention, or all of the attention of everything on the screen, and suddenly everything will be attacking the one character that has the one ability that can cause weakness damage. So, the concept is not bad. I've seen worse attempts at weak point damage systems in Megaton games, several Megaton games. It's just everything surrounding it, from helping you remember what is weak against what, to visual cues for what might be weak against what, to the enemy's targeting algorithms, is really frustrating. So yeah. I'm currently not sure if I'm going to beat this thing, because I'm not sure how to beat the current boss I'm on.
Sometimes the only way to win is not to play.
Yes. I win.
It's like for the glory of the website, because nobody has reviewed this game yet for us.
Well, apparently now we know why.
Yeah, I'm not sure if anyone at the site has played it.
I played it when it came out briefly. then something else came out and distracted me.
Who else would like that?
Probably something better.
Certainly something better.
Okay, what else? What have we been playing that's less depressing?
I've been playing, doodling around with some Final Fantasy. Because Final Fantasy Magic got me interested in playing some Final Fantasy. Restarted Final Fantasy IX on Shenanigans, which I haven't played in forever.
Yay.
I still love that game very much.
Great.
Probably play more of that. But while I'm on this kick, it's time to finally, hopefully, maybe, finish Final Fantasy X-2. A game I don't dislike at all, so I still don't know why that's never happened.
I'll beat you up if you don't do it.
Wow, harsh.
Well then.
But fair.
I think half the reason I didn't finish it was because I couldn't figure out how to make things stop long enough for me to actually use items in battle properly.
Yeah, you're
very annoying when I was trying to catch chocobos.
You can put it on wave mode.
Yeah, even then it was weird. And also, my brain was just coming up with so many different ways that this game could have been made much better.
I'm sure I would disagree, but that's fine. In fact, I'm pretty sure I disagreed back when this was discussed, but that's fine.
I mean, things like a lot of the new area material is simply blocked, literally squared off corridors.
Yeah, I would imagine that was a budgetary concern.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was. Some slightly better organization on how some quest lines flowed into others would have been nice. Most of the plot stuff, I was very entertained by their continental death cult realizes that, the world is not going to end after all. Yay, we're all saved. What the hell are we doing now?
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah, that part was great. A lot of it was just thought organization and how so little of the new stuff, the new environments were really how they compared to the stuff that was obviously recycled from the first game. Some stuff just really wasn't worth it. Yeah. And other stuff, they didn't even give full access to some of the old areas from the first game.
Fuck those places, don't need them.
Yeah. It would have been fun to revisit.
Here's the smoking crater where home used to be.
I think what we argue about most was the supposed plan for Final Fantasy X-3, where it was supposed to bring back Yu Yevon again.
I don't think any of us liked that. I don't think we had an argument about
that. No, we all agreed that this was an awful idea, and it was just... I mean, this was
the least interesting thing
you could do. This was just the Emperor Returns. Yeah. Palpatine Returns level of awful.
Tidus had returned somehow.
Tidus did return. That was part of FF10-2's ending if you were good at the game. Unlike you.
Wow.
Well then.
We'll find then.
I mean,
Orin returned.
I really
somehow.
Did like the idea that there was. I love the idea that there was enough history to this world that there was the depth to have more issues than just the never ending death cult going on.
It was
very much an organization and presentation issue. It just didn't work well for me.
Yeah, who each their own. I'm going to talk about a video game.
Which one?
Let's see. I had a long train ride, so I played through the entirety of the original Klonoa. That's still a wonderful, wonderful game.
Oh, nice.
I love that game.
Cleared the extra vision at the end. That's a very difficult bonus level. I like that. I decided that I was apparently on a platformer kick and started playing Penny's Big Breakaway and Bakeru, which are both significantly on sale right now.
Mm-hmm.
Penny's Big Breakaway is currently 50% off. I think Baklu is like 40% off. I forget what the exact multiple is, but Penny's Big Breakaway is from the developers of Sonic Mania, and it is sort of the midpoint between a 3D Sonic game and Super Mario 3D World. It has a lot of interesting, like, weird, very exploitable elements of how its controls work that I've been enjoying messing around with, and there's a lot of rewards for, like, there's a scoring system that's not super important, but it's clearly there to be, like, something you can that you can show off how good you are at the game by showing that you can get through an entire game with an get through an entire level with an unbroken multiplier by essentially your multiplier breaks when you just are walking through the level. So if you are jumping or riding your yo-yo around or doing like weird air tricks, that keeps the multiplier going and increases it. So the core of the design encourages like players who have already played through a level to get really good at going through a level in a very Sonic fashion, even though it's nowhere near as fast as Sonic. Although it does get pretty fast if you're riding around on the yo-yo, right? But it's got a lot of momentum, a lot of clever tricks to it. It's very charming. I've been enjoying that. And Bakeru is it's from Goodfeel, the people who made Yoshi's Woolly World, Kirby Epic Yarn, Princess Peach Showtime. And it's kind of their homage to the old Goemon games. And it's great. It's especially on Switch 2, where it runs at a rock solid 60. But Bakeru is like, you're a little tanuki who can transform into other other creatures. Like, your normal form is your human form, and then you can transform into other things. And you, like, all of your attacks are taiko drum based, so you have, like, to the point where, like, they really wanted it so that, like, each of your arms has is holding a different drumstick, so to attack, you hit R or L in combination or in sequence. You'll get, you can, like, sort of move from enemy to enemy quickly if you're alternating taps. So, like, hit with the right and then left. Which has a good feel to it. It's got good music, very charming, very, very Japanese. If you don't know enough about Tanukis yet, I would recommend going and reading Tanuki as a Teapot.
Thank you.
Wow.
I had to ambush while they weren't expecting a plug.
Boom.
Boom.
But yeah, it's got two or three of the most iconic Tanuki stories in there.
Yeah, you'll get a better understanding about what the aesthetic underpinnings of Bakeru are. But yeah, it's a neat little game. It's just very charming. Goodfeel generally makes very, very charming video games, and this is no exception. But yeah, I've been having a good time with those. I've been indulging probably too much because, like, basically every company has like a big old summer sale going at this point.
Yes.
Yep.
And
I'm resisting because I've got too much to play.
A bunch of my Switch wish list went on sale, and it's like, you know what? I can probably spend $15 on 13 Sentinels finally instead of spending $60 on it. That seems fair. So I've got a bunch of Switch games to play that are all, you know, that little bit better, that little bit nicer. Which will all be kicked to the sidelines when Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3 and 4 and Donkey Kong Bonanza come out in like a week and a half.
Yes.
Don't forget about Shadow Labyrinth.
I will try not to. Is that a full $60 goddamn video game?
It's $30.
Oh, thank God. not that it's like, you know, bad, but it is one of those games where it's like, that would be a very hard sell for most people at 60.
Yeah, no, it's 30 bucks. I don't know, it might be cheaper digitally, but the cart is 30 bucks.
Yeah, so I'll grab that. I've got, like, it's such a fucking month, because we've got that, and then at the end of the month I'm picking up Wild Hearts S so that me and Wheels have something stupid to play together. But
hopefully, yeah, it doesn't, like, suck.
The original Wild Hearts was apparently very well thought of, except for the fact that it was almost immediately abandoned because EA was like, fuck this, why did we pay for this? But in general, like, the response I heard was like, this is one of the best Monster Hunter style games, but it's not actually a Monster Hunter game.
Well, that's good, because Monster Hunter Wild sucks ass.
Wow, that seems extreme.
No, I'm putting my foot down on that. The game sucks.
Wow.
What made you turn on it?
The single player is complete ass, and you have to finish it to get to, like, the actual meat of the game.
Okay.
Like, oh, you play this game to fight giant monsters and run around and hunt. So here's a 5-minute dialogue where you have to sit on a horse and not control yourself at all. Yes. And that's only a slight exaggeration.
Dreadful.
Game sucks. This makes me so angry because Monster Hunter Rise was so good. Also makes me angry because if they port it to Switch, I'll probably have to play it again there. Some sucker.
But what if they make a different game?
I mean, that would be rad, because it'd probably be the Rise team.
Yeah, you know the rules. Monster Hunter needs to be taken on a game-by-game basis.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm having a real good time. And again, THPS 3+4 and Donkey Kong Bonanza are going to be to annihilate me. I will die. I've given up and accepted that I'm just going to, like, THPS 3+4 is one of those games that it's just like, this just makes more sense for me to purchase digitally, even though I generally prefer physical copies, because I'm just going to want to be able to throw that on for 3 minutes at any given moment. I don't want to fish out the cartridge, I'm just going to want to swap to it, and it's like, yep, now I'm skating.
Well, if you're getting the Switch 2 version, there is no cartridge, so there you go.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, like, I ultimately ended up pre-ordering it through the eShop anyway, so it's just like, whatever, who cares, fuck it, we're playing Tony Hawk 3+4, I'm downloading it so that I do not have to, like, ever think about where its cartridge is.
Oh, hey, that reminds me, I never talked about, I saw some bands that have songs in Tony Hawk games.
Oh, really?
Yes. So went to a Less Than Jay concert, and one of the openers was the Suicide Machines, whose song "New Girl" is in, I think, Tony Hawk.
THPS 1.
One, yes. And that was the only song I recognized.
Songs in THPS 1.
Yeah.
The other thing I will say is that it was very funny to me that there was a Less Than Jake song added to THPS 1.
Yes.
From an album that came out like 10 years after that series has been relevant.
Yeah, it was Bomb to Drop, right?
Yeah, Bomb Drop.
Yeah.
Which was from the EP Sound the Alarm, I think.
Yeah. Which is hilarious because when they play live, they constantly have to apologize for playing new songs. Because they kept... every time they played a new song, they were like, this is a new song, I don't care, it's a banger. And it was, because all their new shit is just fucking good.
Yeah, I haven't
terrible
heard of,
rock,
like,
and roll fans.
Take, really.
Their new EP Uncharted rules. Every song on that is excellent, and they were really good live. If anyone needs a sample, go look up Walking Pipe Bomb by Less Than Jake. It's a banger. It'll only use up like 2.5 minutes of your time. But we also saw a newer ska group called Bite Me Bambi. I think some of, like, I've never heard of the singer before, but I'm pretty sure a lot of the band is like castaways from other ska bands. A lot of them seem older. I'm not sure. There's not a lot of information. They don't even have a Wikipedia page, so I can't even look too much up.
Good luck, buddy.
They were really good. And I also saw Fishbone, who has been around since the late 70s.
Yeah, some of the old school ska is real, real old.
Yeah, but it's interesting. If you listen to some of their songs from the 80s and didn't know it was from the 80s, you would think it was ska from the 90s. very clear inspiration, yes. But they have a very good new song that everyone should listen to. It's called Racist Piece of Shit. Highly recommend.
Wow. Beautiful.
Is it dedicated to anyone in particular?
Exactly who you guess it would be.
Okay. I can make multiple guesses, and quite possibly they're all true at the same time.
Yes. The hilarious part about that band was, so most of the band is newer. That's just like the front man that's original.
Still hanging out.
But they were crazy because he was like playing a theremin, which I've never seen any band use ever.
Oh, those are fascinating that he actually played.
Yes. Not only that, but there was one song where he played that. He played an alto sax. He played a baritone sax. He played a clarinet, and then he took the mouthpiece off the clarinet at the end just to wail on that for a few seconds.
Oh, that's terrifying.
And also, during the first song they played, their keyboardist, you know, I look away, I look over, suddenly he's playing a trombone and just randomly tosses aside to a roadie and continues playing keyboard. They're wild. Fishbone rules. And that is your music quest for the week.
Let's see. Video games. What do you got, Joe?
Well, over the past week, I've mostly been playing Tears of the Kingdom, and finally did all four of the temples, and I've just been spending a lot of time farming monster components that I need to upgrade gear and
I'll be right back
and buying more armor sets. So it turns out if you want to get the Firebreaker helmet and greaves, you have to buy them, and that's going to run you 2600 rupees. But I did that, and then I was just trying to upgrade stuff. I'm trying to get more Hinox guts. So what didn't occur to me for a long time was that, like, during the Blood Moon, every monster respawns, and you can just put a marker on your map where the Hinox and Blue Hinox are, and it's like, oh, why didn't I just do that, like, you know, 80 hours ago? That would have been great to farm those guts, but that's all right. And I just learned how to take down the Gleox enemies, and just while we were talking, I just took out another Frost one, and I had a Savage Lionel bow and a whole bunch of Fire Keese eyeballs, so, man, you just shoot that, and it just, in one hit, he gets staggered, and then I wail on his heads once he hits the ground, so that's fun. I did this whole quest where you got to bring these, like, stone eyeballs to this statue underground, and once you do that, you get either a heart container or stamina vessel. But then he's like, oh, you found my brethren, and then he was able to sell me the headpiece for the depths set. So now I have the hood, the tunic, and the gaiters, which is nice. I got all three pieces of the miner's outfit. I got all three Zora. I got all three Flamebreaker. And now I'm trying to save up to get the rest of the Snowquill set. And then at some point, yeah, maybe I'll go to that next quest, you know, because they want me to go back to the landing area, lookout landing, and let Pura know that I did the four temples, but I didn't feel like progressing the story just yet. Just having a ball with that, and just really just dumped a lot of time into this game. over the past week. And other than that, Marvel Rivals, which we played last night, some F-Zero GX. Yeah, I did a bunch of my Switch 2 June streams. And funny thing is, the only new game that I got for Switch 2 was Mario Kart Worlds. Everything else was just enhanced Switch 1 games. You know, like Pokemon Scarlet doing that second DLC and all that. So, yeah, that's mostly what I've been playing. Let me see here. I'm just going to bring up my page here on Switch 2. Yeah, so apparently since I've gotten the Switch 2, I've logged about 35 hours into Tears of the Kingdom. So,
cool.
Yeah, so basically, so the bad news is that when everything carried over, it didn't keep track of all the hours that all my play activity didn't come over. But it's like, okay, well, yeah, so it's telling me 35 hours or more of Tears of the Kingdom, 5 hours or more of Pokemon Scarlet. And, oh, you know what? Maybe some of it did come over. I don't know. Okay. Because now it's saying played 10 hours or more of Game Boy Advance, which I know I didn't do on Switch 2. So that's weird. Some of it came over and some of it didn't. I played about 20 hours of Mario Kart World, it looks like. So I still have to do the Mirror Mode Cups if I feel like it. So I haven't done that yet. And then I got these all the notes thing through the app here. So let me bring this up real quick. Because this is saying... yeah, my play data. So I got a bunch of medals for doing different things, but then time spent in Hyrule, 99 hours. Enemies defeated, 1,464. Treasure chests opened, 294. Materials collected, 3,321. Weapons collected, 172. Rupees collected, 5,903. And then deaths experienced, 133. Wow. That's wild. And then I did jump into Street Fighter VI briefly to do the new world tour content for what's her name, Elena. You know, so you do some quests and she becomes your she, you know, teaches you her style and all that. So, and then looking forward to Sagat, gonna do that. And oh, and they're adding swimsuit costumes for some of the characters. So you can make Luke look like a lifeguard. Yeah, he looks like David Hasselhoff. It's great. But then I think Chun-Li, Cammy, Aki, Menon, and Kimberly are all getting bathing suits as their costume.
Do they look like the rest of the Baywatch cast?
Well,
it looks like their designs are the Chun-Li and Cammy designs are actually pulled from some old Capcom key art, so they're kind of cool. But yeah, they look about how you'd expect for the most part.
Yeah,
they bring their own flotation devices.
But did Wheels ever return? Wheels is dead.
He's gone.
Yeah, he fell asleep, and we will not be seeing him again. Let's see. I should actually hit a couple of questions.
Oh, and then real quick, last night I did jump on to FF7 Rebirth again. Because remember last time I talked about it, I had just made it to Chapter 9. So I've been driving around in my little vehicle that they gave me, and I'm in the jungle. And I use Kate Sith in battle for the first time, and it's like, oh, he's fun. He's got an ability where he just throws a giant dice at the enemies, and then the number dictates what it does. I'm like, that's neat. I could have fun with that. So hoping to... yeah, because I'm going to be streaming Visions of Mana starting tomorrow night for RP Gamer, but I have other JRPGs I'm going to play in my own time and possibly, you know, on my own streams on other days of the week. So something to look forward to. Okay.
I'm gonna see if I can find the dang old questions. Let's see. I might say, remember a few weeks ago when I asked about potential Capcom releases on GOG. For some reason, Devil May Cry 4 Special Edition and DMC HD Collection is now available. Yeah, that one does, like, those don't stick out to me just by virtue of the fact they're already available on basically any other place you can get PC games. It's like they still run. That pretty much left the various Mega Man and Street Fighter collections to be the ones most likely to be on GOG before. Get into Dead Rising, Lost Planet stuff. What people really hope for is GOG to put some money into fixing whatever is wrong with PC ports, but that's a once in a blue moon thing. Yeah, I don't know. I could maybe see some work being put into Lost Planet 1 and 2. We'll see. I wouldn't expect any work to be put into Lost Planet 3. I feel like Dead Rising already works. I mean, even aside from the deluxe remaster. Oh, Wheels survived. But yeah, I feel like most of those, like, I don't think that the Lost Planet ones work, but I'm pretty sure Dead Rising still works just fine. So, like, it would be available on an additional storefront, and presumably without DRM, but it would still be kind of the same game. They've kept those in circulation.
Yeah, I do recall having some fun with Lost Planet 2 on Xbox 360 when I had a friend to play it with, but beyond that, I didn't find them all that interesting.
Yeah. Played a demo of the first one. It was impressive for 2006. I have no particular need to play it in 2025, 19 years later. Oh, God. let's see. 2 weeks ago, I asked about the difference between mundane but uncanny villainy versus fantastic but digestible villainy. Where does taking drugs fall into the tragedy?
Usually.
I know exactly what you're referencing, by the way. Historically there's been a lot of, like, that person is on drugs and that means that they're basically impervious to pain or whatever. But I think that's largely sort of gone away. It's the general portrayal of people on drugs as someone who is mostly just in a very bad place and kind of pitiable. Like, certainly oftentimes used as an excuse for why a person would commit petty crimes, not usually used as an excuse for why someone would orchestrate grand villainies.
Yeah. No, I feel sorry for anyone addicted to, like, heroin or OxyContin, anything like that. That's just awful. I wouldn't wish that on anyone.
Yeah, like, for fiction-wise, it's kind of like a messy shorthand that doesn't really get a lot of play nowadays, at least in American media, just because it's, like, there's enough people that would just be like, this is just kind of sad.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you wanted to communicate something very specific about them, you'd have to dig into stereotypes about specific drugs, and then that gets, like, it becomes much less clear if the audience will know what you're getting at. So, like, I would associate, say, ketamine with people who have way too much money and are, like finding ways to dissociate themselves from seeing other people as human. But that's a pretty... That requires you to have a lot of knowledge about ketamine. So
yeah, that's awfully specific. Yeah, and we know who you're talking about.
I'm not just talking about now.
Okay,
I have heard multiple stories of, like, tech weirdos getting addicted to ketamine and losing the ability to see other people as people. It seems to be a weird form of dissociation that is associated with it. So.
Yeah, I read a story about
as I recall, yeah. Ketamine is in the same family of drugs as PCP. In fact, I think it was developed as an improved version, as PCP was originally supposed to be an anesthetic, and its issues with mental dissociation and hallucinations made it a bit problematic for that.
Yeah.
So that's a normal side effect. That's also where some of the stereotypes from the 80s about drugs and super strength come from, because PCP will dissociate your mind so much from your body that you do not feel the pain when you are wrecking yourself doing things.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. If you're in a bad situation with it.
Yeah, ketamine is supposed to be essentially a horse tranquilizer.
Yeah. And when used as directed, it's actually very useful for what it's meant to be. It's just not
very good at tranquilizing horses.
No, I mean, it's also, I mean,
I know,
like I said,
know,
it's from an anesthetic family, so it is useful for some types of pain management for humans. It's just not in the amounts being used.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I read a story about a woman who was addicted to ketamine, and it basically broke down the lining of her bladder.
Yeah, incontinence happens a lot with it.
So she just got to a point where she couldn't go like more than 20 minutes without having to use the bathroom, and that was her whole life from that point on. Just basically living in the bathroom. Yeah.
So. I'm saying, if we're just talking about America and no other country, how many states allow graphic depiction of using weed or weed-derived products? There's a thing that says you can't depict it, although, you can show someone, like, smoking weed. It's just, you know, you might get people complaining about it, especially
if it's
fictional depiction.
Most of the Hays Code's kind of out of enforcement now, so that would have been the main issue is the actual industry codes.
Yeah, like FireMiner brings up that like there are Call of Duty skins that are just like there's the infamous blunt force pack that's just a bunch of weed references. There's apparently a weapon skin that just turns your gun into a bong and the idle animation is just you smoking from it. Yeah, it's like there's nothing that says you can't depict it. It's just a question of like it's where it's been decriminalized, which is to say like most of the states you might actually want to be in if you had a choice.
And then funny story. Do you ever watch Grandma's Boy?
I did not.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a Adam Sandler movie that doesn't actually have him in it. You know, it's a Happy Madison production. Yeah, but there's a character. Well, and there's a lot of pot smoking throughout the whole movie, and there's this one character who just gets really high, like. He's he goes to knock on his friend's door and he answers the door and he's totally naked. And he's like, I tried calling you, you didn't answer. What's going on? Oh man, I'm putting up my Christmas tree, dude. It's like, it's July. Get the fuck out of here. Why are you naked? Oh shit, I am. But then I guess there were a couple scenes where, you know, they're smoking weed and they couldn't really smoke it though. During the production, that would have been illegal at the time. So they pretended they were just smoking like just regular grass. But one of the guys snuck in some weed and was smoking it. And this one scene, unfortunately, took 10 or 15 takes. And by the end of it, he was just high out of his mind. Yeah.
I'm thinking this is the same reason why whenever you see somebody drinking alcohol in a movie, they're not actually drinking alcohol because of the number of times they have to go through the same scene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless you're Leonardo DiCaprio and you manage to smash the glass in the scene, and oh no.
Well, I guess that's our take now.
I mean, it was the perfect take. It was just
I know,
like, oh man,
I mean. That's got to be the take now.
Yeah. And I always think about in Wolf of Wall Street when he takes those old Quaaludes and they take like an hour to kick in. Yeah, wild.
Okay, FireMiner saying, when tons of D&D games came out in the 80s and 90s, it gave developers a chance to set their games in one of the stranger settings, since games are so expensive and take too long to make nowadays. Most D&D games just default to Sword Coast, Faerun, Forgotten Realms. How big of a loss to gaming is this? I mean, so what I would say in response to this is that if you were going to use an interesting setting, you probably weren't licensing D&D in this day and age.
Yeah,
which is not meant to sound as much like a knock as it is, but it is one of those things where it's like, yeah, I like Planescape and shit, but also, if I want a weirdo setting, I can just roll my own weirdo setting.
And it's been encouraged since the beginning, no matter how much the corporate overlords of D&D prefer that you wouldn't.
Yeah. So, like, at this point, if you're licensing D&D, you might as well be using one of the big settings, because that's kind of the only point in doing that, other than getting to, like, that's kind of the only reason to do that, other than getting the rule set. But you'd probably be happier making your own rule set that's better suited to a video game anyway.
And the rule set itself is mostly open game license at this point.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you'd have to be doing your own thing in order to adapt any of it in the first place. But most of the stuff that you would need is going to be so generic to the style of game that they can't actually legally copyright it. Which is why OGL exists.
It's definitely too late for that to begin with. But yeah, there's just not a lot to be gained from the D&D license if you aren't getting one of the recognizable settings. So, like, while I'm sure that there, I think someone actually did make it. I was gonna say I'm sure there are Dark Sun fans. That would love a video game. Like, I think you'd be better off rolling something that was similar to Dark Sun rather than actually licensing Dark Sun.
Pretty much.
Which I guess Dark Sun.
But one thing you wouldn't have to deal with Wizards of the Coast or Hasbro.
Yeah, and apparently, if you were to actually deal with Hasbro and Wizards, you'd probably have difficulty making, say, a Dark Sun game, because apparently they never actually made a 5th edition version of that setting.
They did not.
So it would probably be difficult to get them to play ball with that.
Keep going.
I also don't like that setting because the wizards are destroying the earth.
Yeah, fuck wizards.
Fuck Dark Sun. It's lame.
No, because, I mean, this makes a perfect allegory to the current issues of technocrats in the world.
Oh, God. But, yeah, like, that's kind of the thing you run into, is that, like, if you're licensing D&D, that's the other thing you run into, and, like, that is part of being why it's brought up, but, like, you're dealing with Hasbro. Baldur's Gate 3 sold like 10 million copies. And Larian's response immediately afterward was, "We sure can't wait to not deal with them again."
Yep.
So, yeah, like by all appearances, Hasbro is just kind of a pain in the ass.
Kind of makes it shocking that they managed to get a collab with Square Enix together.
I'm sure that, like, the ways in which Hasbro is a pain in the ass, if you're a licensor rather than a licensee, is probably very different.
That's a good point.
Like, with Square Enix, it's like, yeah, we get final say over what the art looks like, and maybe, like, probably not a terrible, potentially some sort of veto power over what's in there. Like, there was probably, it probably wasn't exactly hard to convince Hasbro, like, please primarily focus on products that we are currently in the process of selling more of. So FF7, because we're in the process of doing FF7 remake, FF14, because that is an active ongoing video game. And, like, honestly, I could believe that mandate came from either of them, because it makes sense. Those are the most popular games.
FF10 seemed to get the most love beyond that.
Yeah, like, it really came down to, like, what was the most popular game. The more popular the game was, the more cards it got. That seems to have really basically been it.
And that's kind of what you would expect if you heard anything about this partnership going forward. It's like, okay, I can make a list of what I think is most likely going to appear in this series, and we'd probably be correct.
Yep. Like, honestly,
half the set is Final Fantasy 14.
Well, and things like, you know, Phantom Train and the suplexing thereof.
Yes.
Yep, gotta do the things that the fans will never stop memeing about.
I was gonna say, yes, the most meme-worthy stuff.
But yeah, like, it's one of those situations where it's impossible to tell where the mandate come from, because the goals of the licensor and licensee are simpatico. So you just kind of have to, like, I'm sure that that partnership probably went off pretty easily. But, you know, you get something like Larian making Baldur's Gate 3, like, Hasbro and Wizards would have a pretty specific idea of, like, what they want their campaign settings to look like, and what settings they want you to use, and what, like, certain things that are like, you can touch this, you can't touch that, because it might,
like, romance options, the bear. Yeah.
I mean, I think Larian, if you've seen their prior games, were absolutely into that, but
No. I was thinking Hasbro's reaction to some of the things Larian was coming up with.
I think Hasbro might have, if Hasbro was aware of it, they might not have cared for it, but I think Wizards was like, yes, absolutely.
Sure, we could bear that.
Fuck yourself. yeah, just so like that. You know what? Podcast over.
You're done.
I'm out. But yeah, like, yeah, you know, it's the difference between being the licensee and the licensor, how that relationship plays out. But yeah, I'd say I don't think, to backtrack to the original question, I don't think it's particularly a huge loss, just by virtue of the fact that, like, I think the place that it's the biggest loss for is actually probably, like, Hasbro. Because, you know, they could if they were, you know, in a position, like, this was a good way to draw eyes to a setting that maybe had, like, potential, but no real marketing around it. But I mean, who knows? I'm reminded of the D&D MMO that somehow is still running is set in the fucking Eberron setting. Which is a setting that I don't think I would know about except for Dungeons & Dragons Online.
Which MMO?
DDO, Dungeons & Dragons Online.
Because there's also a Neverwinter Nights MMO.
Yeah.
But... yes, Neverwinter, the one that's somehow worse.
How is that possible?
Because it's much more abusively monetized. But yeah, like, just one of those things, like, yeah, I think that ultimately, like, it was at one time, it's honestly the biggest, like I said, it's probably the biggest loss for Hasbro, as opposed to, like, you know, for a developer, you're looking at, well, we can just roll our own setting. And, like, we don't get the D&D, like, name, but if we were going to use one of the unusual settings, we're already aiming for a subset that loses much marketability to begin with. Mm. And, you know, you can get real close. Anyone remember that Fallout was originally a GURPS game?
Yes.
Really?
What the hell is GURPS?
Generic universal role-playing system.
Oh.
Basically, whatever you think looks cool, put it in, and it somehow works system.
Yeah.
Very much.
Fallout was supposed to be a GURPS, was going to use the GURPS system, which is why Special is not totally dissimilar to it. Yeah, like, and then, you know, late in development, they were like, let's not. So instead of being a post-apocalyptic GURPS campaign, it was a post-apocalyptic RPG that used something kind of similar but different. The end.
And this explains a lot of the randomness with the conversation and branching conversation trees, because that's very much a GURPS kind of thing. So...
But yeah, let's see if I can pull this up. I know what I'm. Yeah. So one of the guys who worked on that and a whole bunch of other old school RPGs, Timothy Kane, has a YouTube channel now where he talks about a lot of some of the old stuff he worked on to give some actual. I'm going to pull up his Mobi game so I don't miss some of these, because he's worked on a lot of old school RPGs that are pretty interesting. That the crowd who would actually, whatever person would listen to this would probably enjoy looking him up. So things he's worked on. He was on The Outer Worlds, Tyranny, Pillars of Eternity, Wildstar, South Park, Stick of Truth, Fallout New Vegas, Vampire the Masquerade, Bloodlines, Temple of Elemental Evil, Arcanum of Steamworks and Magic Obscura, Fallout 1 and 2. So, you know, a guy who was on a lot of, like... a lot of nerdy RPGs. He's got a YouTube channel now, and he's talked about a lot of them, a lot of interesting stuff about Fallout, about the old Troika crew, even about some of the less well-known stuff or less well-known or beloved stuff here, like Wildstar. Real interesting guy. Good videos on his YouTube channel if you want to know about some of the old stuff and just the kinds of considerations that went into those old games. He's very open about that kind of thing. Fully recommend going and looking that up. It's his YouTube channel is just under his name, Timothy Kane. So recommended.
Cool.
Let's see.
Did he work on Avowed?
He did not. He's like semi, I think he's like semi-retired, which is why he, you know, started up the YouTube channel. Nice. But yeah, he was with Obsidian on up through, like I said, up through Outer Worlds.
Okay.
Let's see. Fireman asks, what do you think about the opinion that per-dollar video games give you really good entertainment value? I recently talked to a LEGO collector who complained about the models being downsized and designs missing pieces at really awkward places, all the while keeping the same price or even increasing. Yeah, shrinkflation hits us all. I mean, for me, they are, like, especially because, you know, like I said, I spent a lot, I spent a fair bit of money over the past week, but I also got, like, a dozen games for, like, $80, so
yes,
if I am buying literally everything the second it comes out, video games are an expensive hobby. But also, video games, like, as a to own proposition, like, not, you know, you look at, say, Netflix, and that will give me a lot of movies, or Hulu, or Disney Plus, they'll give me a lot of movies or TV shows at once as a temporary concern. You know, and that's like, if I don't want ads, each of those is like $20 a month. If I want, but you know, my primary the other thing to think about is that this isn't zero sum. Video games are my hobby. I play them because I have more fun playing them than I do. Like, if I'm just playing a random, like, replacement level game versus watching a random replacement level TV show, I'm going to have more fun playing the playing the replacement level game than watching the replacement level TV show. So, for me, yeah, they're a great value. Like, I am I spend a lot of money on the ones that I care about, and the ones that I don't care that much about, I get pretty cheap. And oftentimes, like, a short video game for me is 6 hours long. Which is a fair bit of entertainment as far as I'm concerned. So
sometimes I'll just grab something like a really cheap platformer game or Metroidvania game and just mess around with it until I've gotten all the upgrades and stuff, and it's like, okay, that's like $5 worth of entertainment, definitely, or however much I actually paid for it.
Yeah, so. You know, like a lot of those, like, that's, you know, if I'm just taking a chance on a random Metroidvania, I probably paid $15 for it. That's not a lot.
When I'm comparing prices for various things, I'll think, okay, that's like two Switch games worth of stuff. And it's like, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like,
that's in perspective how much I'm actually paying for video games, though.
Yeah, it's one of those things like, yes, video games are really expensive if you're getting all of the newest stuff the second it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I'll also point out that, like, yes, some companies do not put games on sale nearly as much. Like, Nintendo games typically don't go on sale. Their games I would consider extraordinarily high value to begin with. I can't think of a Nintendo game that I haven't spent more than... a Nintendo game I bought that is, like, less than 30 to 40 hours of content. And, more importantly, content worth playing.
Yeah, not only that, but... Yes, they don't go on sale, but they are extremely easy to find. Unlike, some games may go on sale, they may also become scarce as far as like a physical edition. And
I'd like to also bring up people who say like Nintendo games never go on sale aren't actually paying very close attention.
No.
Mario Odyssey is currently 30% off, which is, again, it's an 8-year-old game. It's an older game. It's still 30% off, and no one, like, even brings it up, because it's just like, oh, Nintendo games don't go on sale. And it's like, no, they do. You just pay attention. They go on sale. They don't go on as deep sale. They don't go on, like, the kind of sale you'll see some things where a company has decided this game's never going to sell anything again at base price, so we're leaving it at base price only so that we can show that we can sell it for $5 and mark it as 90% off.
Yeah, I also don't think other, like, first-party games from other companies go on sale as much as people think they do either.
Oh, yeah, first-party games, like, Microsoft has no reason to put games on sale. They want to direct, like, games being expensive is good for them, it directs you to Game Pass. And Sony games, like, you can get those for cheap used because people sell them. Like, you finish, like, God of War, and it's like, well, that's done. Yeah. Okay, I'm calling that back.
You finish Mario Odyssey, and you want to play it again. You ain't selling that shit.
Yeah,
I want to
play Mario Odyssey again. It's, you know, you'll play it with your kids or whatever. Like, Sony will take certain games and, like, whenever they feel like launching a greatest hits for that generation, which gets further and further into the generation, I still don't think that there's one for the PS5. Like, they'll throw some things down to a cheaper price, but for the most part, like, a lot of those games don't really get that much cheaper, and then, you know, sometimes they'll make a shitty remaster. And by shitty, I mean not that the remaster itself is not of any sort of quality, but in the sense that it doesn't really add anything. Mm. And then they will take away the cheaper version of the game.
Yeah.
Still thinking about Horizon Zero Dawn Remastered. But, yeah, like, it's one of those things, like, but yeah, like, a game of... you know, like, at this point, like, it makes it very easy. Like, if it's a Nintendo game, sure, I will pick that up when it's new, because one, I'll definitely get my money's worth, and two, like, you know, it's not worth to me waiting however long it'll take to see it for 30% off or whatever. Like, that $20 ain't worth it to me. I want to play the game now. But,
don't,
you know,
care how I want it now.
But yeah, like, Whereas, you know, if it's a third party game that I don't know that I care about, sure, I'll wait a few months, maybe a few years, and get it cheap. Like, you don't have to get everything right now. It can wait.
I want it all.
Oh God, we have now had two different songs. But yeah, I think in general, the way that I play them, I get a lot of value per dollar on video games. But you know, that's also going to come down to like we talk on a video game podcast. We like just the act of playing games.
I mean, just thinking about the game I forgot to talk about, Cyberpunk 2077. That is a game I could restart and find new things probably almost endlessly.
Yeah,
I could restart that is
some goddamn value right there.
You can restart and switch what your character type is and get a fair bit of difference right from the start.
Yeah,
everyone starts in all three character archetypes start in a different place.
Yep, you make three very different characters right from the beginning.
What is your background right now? Are you Corpo?
I picked Corpo, yeah.
I think that one starts with you vomiting into a toilet after overdosing on something.
No, it is in a bathroom, but you're like freaking out because of work stress.
Ah, gotcha. So the cocaine is merely implied.
Yes.
Yeah, don't you work for like the Arasaka Corporation or whatever? Yes. The main villain.
Yes. Okay. Oh, Arasaka. That's the big corporation in Night City.
Yep.
But yeah, it's you know, you and all the your background will determine your dialogue options, and at least like it can be used for dialogue options in a lot of places. So you get some interesting stuff there. But yeah, like video games can give you some really interesting value for money that goes beyond that initial playthrough. Okay, your answer to the D&D question leads to another. How popular will CRPG and medium to big budget RPG made in the West in general become in the near future? Some people have already got to try out Borderlands 4 and their reaction seems to be more of the same. I would not consider those to be meaningfully the same kind of game. Like, we've seen D&D try to be that kind of game. In terms of like D&D adaptations, and I'm trying to think what I would even compare it to, but like I would not say Borderlands 4 is representative of like the CRPG as a genre, because I would personally consider like the loot farm genre to be kind of its own beast. Which Borderlands currently is. Like, the other thing that I do end up wondering is how much can you do with that genre? Like, if someone told me like Borderlands 4 is too similar, my response would be, what would a distinct looking Borderlands game be?
Make it more like Destiny and less like Diablo.
Meh. Like, I just don't like the Borderlands games.
Educate me as someone ignorant of the genre wheels. What does that mean?
It means instead of getting endless loot that's potentially meaningless or useless, you're getting a lot. Like, you're getting one weapon and you're using that for a long time and upgrading it and kind of keeping it with you and building around that instead of kind of just endlessly getting random shit. If that makes sense.
I understand. This does kind of come down to me as a person who doesn't play these kinds of games and doesn't get their appeal. To me, those still, like, that still sounds remarkably similar. If someone was saying that these don't feel distinct enough, my response would be that that would not be enough of a difference to change that. But that also like more points to how like my inability to understand the genre's appeals means that I can't see what a good path for that franchise would be.
Mm.
So I'll defer to you on this one.
Are
you your ass beat?
Yeah, I have this on half XP.
Why?
Why?
Because I've played this game a million times. I had. I'm gonna change it
I
up.
Assumed that you were. I assumed that you were doing something like ugly and terrible, like making it so the. Like doing that so that you would be able to increase the amount of like levels you would get with the. What you call it with the when you have the magicite?
No.
That you were doing some horrible thing where you try. You really, really need to concentrate your attacks on that thing that can blow you up.
but let me clarify some of my points on the looter shooter nonsense. It's.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to
think
how
looter shooters are bad and damned from birth.
No, you're wrong. So the big issue I think with there's a lot of issues with Borderlands. I think number one being that it's a really bad open world game and they need to just eliminate that aspect. Like the moment to moment gunplay is good, but if you're
I don't think I've ever heard of anyone having fun in the parts of Borderlands where you're driving between dungeons.
No, because they're bad. Which is why the Wonderlands game they made was so good, because there's literally none of that. You walk around a world map and have like random encounters in small little areas.
My solution for Borderlands being bad is to remove anything where a character attempts to tell a joke.
Okay, I'm going to take the story. We're going to set that aside. We're not going to talk about that. Okay, we're only talking about gameplay. Okay, and for me, some of the issues with Borderlands are the same issues that occur in Diablo and a lot of RPGs like that are obsessed with like these not just random loot drops, but like an endless cycle of random loot drops, like. You know, I'm going to get this new weapon and then continue on in the game and then and want to hunt for another weapon and on. And on. Yes, I know you do that in something like Destiny. But I can hunt endlessly for a specific drop and then like use that for hundreds of hours. No matter like how I progress, no matter how far I progress in the game, I can continue to use that item and build around that item and do cool things with that item, and I think that's a key thing that's missing in a lot of these loot-based games, is like the loot is garbage. And I don't mean like the loot is bad, I mean that it's like throwaway. When you get something better, you just chuck it away. And to me, that's incredibly boring, especially in a game like Borderlands, where one of the hooks is there's like a bazillion different perks you can get on a gun, which is cool. But if I get a really cool perk on a gun and then I have to throw it away and an hour later because it's no longer a high enough level to continue using, then that sucks. Does that make sense? Like, there's so many cool things to use.
I've played a couple games like that before, and that was one of my major things about them, is like, okay, the game's giving me all of this loot and all this random stuff. I can't actually use most of it in this particular game because my choice of character to start with sets my equipment list to two different weapon types, and I'm getting eight different weapon types and loot, and none of the other characters can equip anything because it's all supposed to be traded with other people who own this game. And it's a DS game in this case, so... I've played games with similar issues, and it's not fun.
No.
It kind of presupposes something about the way, either the way that you're playing or the friendship environment that you're playing in that does not actually exist.
If you want like a non-Destiny equivalent for what I'm trying to explain here, it would be something like Dark Souls, where you can get a really good weapon and you can upgrade it and continue using that weapon for the remainder of the game and build around that weapon. And that's the thing that I need in like more looter shooters that just isn't there, because everyone's obsessed with being Diablo. Like Borderlands very much seems to pride itself in being the shooter Diablo, and I think it could be more than that, but they don't seem interested, so I don't know.
In conclusion, as someone who doesn't play this kind of game, if your game has a loot score, I hate it. If you have devised a system by which my video game that like is all about getting dumb optimized stats, you've devised a score that exists to tell me whether my stats are good instead of the stats themselves making that clear, I don't want to play your game anymore. Go fuck yourself.
Well, Destiny doesn't do that, so there you go.
Yeah, I wasn't even yelling about Destiny. I was just saying, like, if I see a loot score in a video game, I immediately want to stop playing that video game.
Yeah, that's another problem with Borderlands for sure. Like, I found a cool
like,
gun.
If you,
let me
if
keep
you
using
having
it.
To create, if you were having to create, like, this is just as a general, if you're having to create an aggregate score to explain to me what my stats are, you need to simplify your stat block.
Yes.
Let's see.
What was I gonna say? Cyberpunk almost has this issue too. Like, trying to figure out what weapons are there. Although you can really get by with whatever the hell you want to use in Cyberpunk. Probably unless you have the difficulty racked up.
Yeah, there's all sorts of stuff that also like if it's legendary stuff it can be brought in line with what you need.
Yeah. Also, I mostly use Quick X anyway.
Have you considered getting that one gun that talks and aims for you?
Excuse me? Tell me more.
I didn't find that one either.
Yeah, it's a legendary gun. His name is Skippy. And when
is he voiced by Alex Winter?
I don't believe so, no.
Oh.
But Skippy is this talking gun, and when you get him, you like set whether he's set to lethal or non-lethal mode. If you set him to non-lethal, after a certain number of shots, he will switch and get stuck in lethal. If you set him to lethal, vice versa. And his explanation, but yeah, you can find him in God. Where is he? He's out. He's in Haywood, I think. But yeah, he's just in an alley. You just find him on like a body, and you pick him up, and you suddenly have a conversation with him. Obviously, do not attempt to change Skippy's name. Skippy will end the per this IGN description. Skippy will end the conversation by asking if you want its auto targeting features to be lethal, stone cold killer mode, or non lethal, puppy loving pacifist mode. After 50 kills with Skippy, it will switch to whichever mode you did not choose originally and stay that way permanently. So it's actually best to choose the pacifist mode if you want to utilize Skippy long term. But it's a very powerful pistol. It scales with your level, and it talks. It talks to you.
Oh, okay. So where did you say you find Skippy again?
It's on a body in Haywood.
Okay.
There'll be a question mark marking it.
No, I had the most fun in that game when I just ran around cutting people up with a katana.
Well, that's dark.
Yeah. Well, people who deserved it and already had it coming and dropped good loot, you know. Not innocent people, of course not.
I feel like that last item was probably the most important in your mind.
Yeah.
A lot of fun. I had a lot of fun with Cyberpunk right around the point where I got to a place where I could get things, start getting some of the really stupid like cyberware, like the ones that let you do stupid big jumps and gorilla arms and mono wire and that kind of shit. Oh, also, it's very funny to me that they keep saying, this time it's the last patch, we're sure it's the last patch, and then, like, every few months it's like, okay, we had one more patch, but this is the last one. They have another patch, 2.3, is still coming.
Sweet.
Okay. Honestly, I'm probably about ready to call it quits if we all are.
Sure. Let's start wrapping it up.
Gaijin, aside from Tanuki as a teapot, which we already got the chance to bring up.
Yeah. Well, first I wanted to announce I actually did manage to cheese my way through that boss that was giving me grief earlier.
Hooray!
Yeah, because there's one character who can basically summon Edelons to battle, and normally they don't last very long because you either run out of force points to use their special attacks or you run out of hit points because the enemy's hitting them too hard. This thing, this particular one, absorbs the only element that the boss uses, and standard attacks cost nothing, so I just had her just taking swipes at this boss for about average 1,000 hit points damage per hit for 50,000 hit points worth of damage. Okay, so let's go on to better designed game concepts here. Sorry, that's what I've been living through for the last 30 minutes. Okay, so anyway, happier times. Okay, so if you two are tired of living through ludonarrative dissonance and wondering what the heck were the designers thinking of when they made this game. Honestly, if you're really sick of that, then lit RPG is not the genre for you, but you know what? Let's just enjoy somebody else suffering through these issues from the point of view of inside a video game. That's what this subgenre is about. So we have Vainglorious, Long as the Night, in which the main character and her friends are, in fact, apparently stuck inside some weird extra-dimensional extrapolation of what a Metroidvania might feel like from the inside. She's not enjoying this very much. It only gets worse the more she thinks about it. Seriously, ludonarrative dissonance will get you every single time. It's, again, Vainglorious, Long as the Night. It's available on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. It is a Metroidvania lit RPG with a strong B-movie theme, which makes things really fun sometimes. Beyond that, we also have, for the tabletop role-playing game experience, we have Princesses of the Pizza Parlor. Again, allowing yourself to live vicariously through other people's poor dice rolls and poorer personal decisions. So I currently have my author's copy of the fourth paperback collection in the mail. Should be arriving in a day or two. I shall be posting pictures when it does. Yay. But need to work on finishing the series up because I've got two more ebooks to finish before the main plot line is actually concluded. It will be roughly the length of War and Peace at this point. That's what I was aiming for. And of course, we have already mentioned Tanuki as a Teapot. Might as well mention this again, by Michael Yarimizu, Yarimizu. That's the name I use for all of these. because my in-laws are very nice and let me do that. So, again, Tanuki is a teapot, Japanese folktales, all animal-themed because I just felt like having a theme. And, yes, quite a few of them have Tanuki in them. As the good guys, as the bad guys, as the, you know, he's just trying to live his best life guys. They're just very complicated little animals in this country. So, please just check out, again, Michael Yarimizu. That's MAIKELYARIMIZU. There will not be a lot of hits on Google or DuckDuckGo or whatever your search engine of choice is, so that's kind of the point. So please check them out. Thank you.
Go for it.
Yes.
Buy my book. Sorry.
I was going to say, is anyone going to go for the soundboard?
Buy
my book. There it is.
Okay. So, I mentioned already that I'm going to be participating in JRPG July with RP Gamer, since I am now a staff member again, a podcast panelist, and I'm going to be streaming Visions of Mana Tuesday and Thursday nights from 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. Eastern Time. So those were the time slots that I picked. So we'll see how far I get into that game. And, you know, they just don't want any, like, overlap. Like, they don't want multiple people playing, like, the same game. So if I get bored with that, maybe I'll see what else is available, like Metaphor or something. But, yeah, it's probably just going to be Visions of Mana on those 2 days. And then you can still do twitch.tv/SmokingJoeGamer if you want to see me play other things. So I'm not going to be doing Wednesday streams for the time being, and I will probably still do my own streams on Saturdays, though, and that could be JRPGs or Switch games or whatever. So I might do Switch 2 Saturdays or something to that effect. And my Switch 2 June streams, I did about 5 live streams. Those have all been exported to YouTube. They're all watchable on there. So that's YouTube, Smoke and Joe Gamer. And you can follow me on Blue Sky at Joey at smokeandjoegamer.bsky.social. So you could do that. Yeah, and that's the thing. I just do live streams on Twitch of various games, and, you know, I got a whole bunch of YouTube videos. I got like 400 and some odd videos on there now that you can check out. Yeah, and then, you know, definitely check out rpgamer.com. And there's going to be other people also doing JRPG July streams, so you should consider checking that out. And you could even join the RP Gamer Discord server if you ask nicely. Just a nice community there. Just people, we talk about video games. You know, I'm sure you can fit in there if you like games. But there's also other discussions about movies and comic books and whatever else you can think of. There's a whole music server that I jump onto sometimes. So, yeah, that's what I would recommend. You know, just consider watching the streams and liking, subscribing, following, you know, whatever the site calls for. That would be helpful. Thank you.
As for us, you can ask us questions. You can ask us questions in the podcast section in the Discord for RP Gamer, which you can get to by going to rpgamer.com, clicking community. You can also ask us questions in the comments section on RP Gamer under this very episode. Otherwise, we stream at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern on Mondays. Monday. You know, if you catch us when we're streaming on twitch.tv/rpgamer or twitch.tv/askwheel, we'll do our best to answer the questions as they come in. Thanks once again to Fireminer, as always, for keeping up with questions to answer. We also have our sister show Shenanigans, where some combination of me, Wheels, and Joe plays a multiplayer game and gets mad at each other. You can catch that Sunday night, Sunday at 9 p.m. Pacific, midnight Eastern. Otherwise, I think that about wraps it up. So see ya, Space Cowboy.
See ya.
Good night. This is Mole Man.
This is Mole Man in the morning. Good Mole Man to you. Coming through.